All right, good morning, everybody. I call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, March 21st, 2017, and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again and good morning. Board, if there is no objection, I would like us to continue with the practice we established last time we had bid openings, that we move that right to the top after public comment one, so that we can go ahead and get those done and get the guys who are in here waiting for us to get out of here and then get back to work, which I'm sure everybody will appreciate.
I have no problem with that. You don't need a motion, do you?
I don't unless there's objection. Okay, so we'll start with public comment number one. That's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Come right up to the microphone. I assume Darren does not want to. All right, so Darren, you can stay right there. We'll go to the bid opening right now. So we've got two bids to open, right? One on 590th and one on 250th.
590th first.
Okay.
That's what I was going to check. Okay. Tyler, you pass out the bid tabs, right? Okay. You've got the bid tab to follow along.
Can you pull the mic up just a little bit?
Sure. Okay, the first bidder on the 590th Street project is Midwest Contracting out of Marshall, Minnesota. Bid bond attached and signed. Okay, total for Marshall Midwest Contracting, $126,681.80, 126,681.80, 80. The next bidder is Peterson Contractors out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. Bid bond is attached and signed. Total for Peterson Contractors is $114,288.45, 114,288.45. Next bidder is Progressive Structures out of Elkader, Iowa. The bond is attached and signed. Total for Progressive is $129,338.66, 129,338.66. The last bidder is Riley Construction out of Ossian or Ossian, I don't know how to pronounce that one, Iowa. The bond is attached and signed. Totals for Riley Construction is $147,223.50, 147,223.50. That is all bidders I'm showing, so we will tabulate those and bring them back next week.
Okay.
Now 250th Street.
The first bidder will be Midwest Construction. Actually, let's do Boulder first. That one fell out, so let's do them in order here. Boulder Contracting, we'll do that one first.
Okay. Where are they from?
Boulder Contracting is from Grundy Center, Iowa.
Thank you.
Bid bond is attached and signed. Total for Boulder is $69,406.20. 69406.20. Now we'll go to Midwest Contracting out of Marshall, Minnesota. Bid bonds attached and signed. Total for Midwest is $56,918.40. 56918.40. Next is Peterson Contractors out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. Bid bond attached, signed. Total for Peterson is $46,023.91, 46023.91. Next is Progressive Structures out of Elkader, Iowa. Bid bonds attached and signed. Total for Progressive is $50,707.20. 50707.20. Final bidder is Riley Construction out of Ossian, Iowa. Bid bonds attached and signed. Total for Riley is $66,000. $445.50. 66445.50. Thing. We'll check the numbers and bring it back for the award contract next quarter.
Darren, I think that's the first time since I've been sitting here that we've had every bid come in below our estimate.
Yes, and that one of the reasons for that is we're able to replace a bridge with actual pipe culverts. Mm-hmm. And so I thought we might have been a little high on our estimate for the pipes. We don't do a lot of those. So, and at the time we did our original estimate, we didn't know it was going to be pipes. So
I think it's out. I mean, clearly we're in a favorable time.
It is. For some of this, we need to be getting as much work done as we can. Okay, so you'll bring back to us next week. Thank you very much. Those of you who were attending, have a great day. Moving on, we're at consideration of minutes from last week, March 14th.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion, items to note, or corrections?
None.
Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, Board.
So moved.
Second.
The motion is second. Any discussion? Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions passed. Claims for March 23rd.
Yes, we need to please remove the claim to Story County Conservation Board. We need to be voted on separately. It's for 4A promotions for an ad in the Ames Bulletin Board, and legally I still own the bulletin board. It's being sold on contract. So I can't vote on that one for our attorney.
All right, so motion on claims with the one claim to the Ames Bulletin Board removed.
Second.
We have a motion and second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. All right, we have one claim to deal with. That is a claim from conservation to the Ames Bulletin Board.
So I would move.
You move that we pay that claim.
Yeah, I would move acceptance of the claim as listed.
And I'll second. Any discussion? Loris already noted that potential conflict of interest for her, which is why she'll sit this one out. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson. Abstaining. Thank you. Sanders. Aye. That claim passes. Consent agenda. All items as listed, Board.
So moved.
I second.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes in total. No public hearing items today, which gets us to additional items. We've already done item one and two on additional items, the bid openings. So we're to consideration of Resolution 1787, amending FY17 appropriations. Markley needs more money.
This is the time of year we go back to 1817. Okay, so for FY17, currently the appropriations that you guys have approved of the budget is 95% of the budget throughout the most of the departments. And elected officials, what this appropriation does is it appropriates 100% of salaries.
Okay.
Salary-related line items.
Which, Board, is something we knew we were going to have to do since we only budgeted last year 94% of if every position was filled
right.
Every time.
Right.
This doesn't take us to 100% of all salaries. This gets us to where we can actually pay all salaries the rest of the year.
But no, this takes us to 100% of what we budgeted for salaries.
So some of this will be coming back.
94%.
Okay.
So we're 100% of 94% right now.
Okay.
Now, what will happen next is we will do a budget amendment to determine what
actually
is going to get spent and what actually we're going to have to appropriate.
So this is going to put more dollars in than we absolutely need, but plenty to make sure that we can go ahead and pay salaries.
We're going
to
this is going to get us through through the point of amendment at this point in time. For some, it's sufficient. For some, it's not. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Questions for Lisa?
None.
None.
I have no consideration of Resolution 1787.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1787 passes. Thanks, Lisa. Next, a discussion and consideration of centralized office shredder replacement here in the admin building, and to purchase the shredder for $2,299.99. Why isn't that just $2,300?
Sure, you can go with that.
Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
This item came up as a discussion during our budget work session in January. The treasurer's office had been looking at our replacement shredder and had done a lot of the homework and legwork with looking at different options. And so when that was brought before the board during the budget work session, it was discussed that many of the offices, all the offices, could benefit from this particular kind of office equipment. It would be placed in the mail room, so all offices would have access to it. And so we moved it then to having the purchase be made through the Board of Supervisors yet this fiscal year to replace what we have down in the mail room. So we looked at a variety of the options, looked at number of users, safety features, capacity, those kinds of things, and arrived at the units that you have before you through Staples and through Staples. And so it's roughly $2,300, and I think it's something that will be well utilized. I think it could also save on time for facilities. Right now they do take up take box shredded items over to the Waste Recovery Center on a routine basis, and I think that would save on their time as well if we could do all of that in-house.
It makes sense that we're going to centralize this. This is the right one, so this has capacity for somebody to be able to put in a stack of sheets and they all get shredded and should save us some time.
Yes.
Okay. Question, Board?
None.
So this is an unbudgeted item. We pulled it. It was brought before us as a potential budgeted item for FY18. We asked that we move it up, but that means that we get to take specific action on it. So if there's no questions, I take a motion to go ahead and buy this.
I'll move that we purchase this machine out of fiscal year 17 funds.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thank you.
Next
item is discussion consideration of Resolution 1789, the Hewen Agricultural Subdivision, Third Edition. I am late.
Good morning. Okay, so this is a request for an agricultural subdivision plat. The applicant is Keith Hewen of 21352 650th Avenue of Nevada. The property is located in Section 22 of Richland Township, located, there's two residential dwellings on within the subdivision and along 650th Avenue, just about a mile and a half northeast of Nevada. So we're in Richland Township again, south of Fernald, but about a mile and a half northeast of Nevada. The zoning in this area is A1, and it's completely surrounded by the A1 district. There are six dwellings within a half mile of this property and 17 parcels that are equal to or greater than 35 acres, which would make them candidates for zoning permit for a single-family dwelling. So this is the current configuration. These are all of the parcels currently within all of the Hewen agricultural subdivisions. It's a little bit confusing, but my goal here is to show you that this third edition really does clean up the existing configuration. I will go into this here. In 1998, a plat of survey created this lot one of the original Hewen agricultural subdivision. The remainder of it, which was parcel B, lot B, I'm sorry. Lot A, which was the right-of-way here, it was platted as Lot A But that is kind of being taken into proposal lots 1 and 2 to clean it up. And we'll just be platted as right of way on the new configuration. In 2002, the second edition of the Huon Agricultural Subdivision was recorded to create existing lots 1 and 2. So this is lot 1 of the second edition, Huon Agricultural Subdivision, and this is lot 2. So it's a little bit confusing, but this is the proposed subdivision.
That is a little cleaner.
Right, yeah. So the proposed subdivision includes proposed lot 1, which includes the 1915 original farmstead, proposed lot 2, which includes the 1942 dwelling, as well as the barn, which will be used for the agriculture production on outlot A, what is now going to be outlot A, which will be converted to hay and alfalfa. The existing access easement, I want to point out, is on the very north side of this subdivision. The engineer's office felt it was not safe to have an access point there from the 650th. So that easement has been moved to an existing driveway right on lot 1. There are these red X's on buildings that plan to be removed. So a lot of this will get cleaned up with this subdivision. Here's the proposed agricultural subdivision plat. We have proposed lot 1, which would be 1.78 acres, gross acres. Again, we're kind of taking in the right-of-way, which was lot A previously, into proposed lot 1 and proposed lot 2. Proposed lot 2 is 1.19 gross acres, and then proposed outlot A is 3.37 acres. Here's the existing dwellings. This is the 1915 dwelling and the 1940s dwelling here. He's looking south along 650th Avenue. The barns and the sheds on proposed outlot A. And then looking west across lot 1, across 650th Avenue. The 1942 dwelling, again. Here is the existing barn on proposed lot 2. And then the view of the dwelling on proposed lot 1 from proposed lot 2. Here's a shed that's to be removed, and the shed and bin on proposed outlot A there. So the applicable regulations within our land development regulations for an agricultural subdivision plat, the lots created by the subdivision are intended to be used for agricultural purposes. The subdivision contains no new development lots. We're not creating new lots for housing. The subdivision includes no land set apart for new streets, alleys, parks, dedicated open space, or school property. And the subdivision lies wholly within the A1 or A2 district.
We're actually reducing the number of lots in this, right? By the time you include that original outlot A up front, and
yes. Weren't
you four or five
we're
lots?
Really, yeah, we're really just cleaning it up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So just to highlight a couple of comments from the interagency review team, if the property is sold, there will need to be a time of transfer inspection on the septic. The engineering department highlighted this lot A issue where the right-of-way was included in lot A, and that's kind of being joined with lots 1 and 2 in the proposed subdivision. Really cleans things up. Outlot A, again, has access currently has an access easement on the north side, but is that's being moved down to proposed lot 1 to accommodate the existing driveway. Planning and development had just questions about clarifications. We have some setback questions that have been resolved on the final plat. We mailed notification letters to property owners within a quarter mile of the proposed subdivision on March 10th, and we have not received any comments.
So in summary, the primary goal is to improve the configuration of the existing subdivisions. The subdivision meets all the requirements and standards for an agricultural subdivision. Outlot A will be used for hay and alfalfa production. And proposed lot 2 will include the barn used for that agriculture, and proposed lot 1 will include the original farm dwelling, which again was built in 1915. The subdivision allows for legal access to outlot A through the new access easement, and the quarter is surrounded by agricultural parcels that are owned by the applicant's family. Planning and development staff recommend approval of the Hun Agricultural Subdivision 3rd Edition as put forth in case subdivision 0317. Do you have any questions?
None. Just tell another thank you for the nice paperwork and thank you for the nice presentation. The nice clean. Everything should be this easy.
All right, so do we have desired action on Resolution 1789?
I would move adoption of Resolution 1789.
I would second that.
Thanks. Motion and a second. Discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion and consideration of Story County acceptable use policy for 7-day review. Mark Steinman. Hi, Barb.
Good morning, Board. Barb Steinbach, Information Technology. I'm bringing you today the proposed Story County acceptable use policy. This replaces the current security policy that we are currently using. And this is, by the way, the first product of our security assessment that we had done a couple months ago. So the contents of this policy are based on recommendations by that assessor, and also he sent me to several other websites for suggestions. So there's also some information from the SANS Institute and from the NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards. So, and I also got some information from the Solutions website. They have some very good information. So what this basically covers is everything relating to IT equipment, software, access, network, and then it also references toward the end a few other policies that this is over, the umbrella over. Most of them we already have in place, which will be updated, but a new one is the data classification, which, according to the experts, this will help us not only provide the security and the access the users need, but also in the case of a disaster, which ones to recover first, which ones have a priority. Do you have any questions?
Barb, in the data classification, who's going to make the determination? Will it be department by department as to what needs to be retrieved in an emergency?
I think initially I'll start out with suggestions and then involve the other department heads, because each department has things that, if their opinion are important, we need to keep in mind we're going to classify per how we run the county. So everything relating to county operations comes first.
And Laura, the answer to that question is, if we're in a disaster and there has to be either or, IT reports directly to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors will make any determination if there's a question of whether that person.
Correct.
I had a question on the overview.
Okay.
Paragraph 2. We're not a company, we're a county.
Right.
And we don't have clients or customers, we have citizens and constituents.
We'll make those notations.
And so I would also like, in case I missed some kind of reference like that in the rest of the document, I'd like somebody to do a search and make sure that we're not referring to ourselves as a company.
I did put company in there. Not sure which one we wanted to use, county versus company, because we do act as a company, although we are a county.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay.
I was going to ask what you prefer.
Absolutely. I had it marked, too.
Okay. Yep. Anything else that we need to talk about?
Remember now this, if we pass it at this point, it'll go out for 7-day review and we would take final action next week.
Right. I do have. Down to 4.3 blogging and social media. Items 3 and 4, and I will admit that I didn't have time to review this, our social media policy this morning. It's been a couple months since I signed it. But I'm very concerned about taking away the employees' right to, in their own time, on their own blog site, to comment about their lives, including possibly making comments about working for the county. You know, I think that they should reserve that right, and at least the way I'm reading it, we all know every time I read something a little differently.
Yeah, so read it too.
So, okay, so 3 said employees should not engage in any blogging that may harm or tarnish the image, a reputation, or the goodwill of the county and of or its employees. And so if someone comes home from work that day and gets on their personal blog and says, wow, what a tough day. I wish the Board of Supervisors would double the funding to our department because we need more people. I think that is their First Amendment right. And I don't think we can take that away. And then it just goes.
But I don't think that's derogatory.
Okay.
Well, if somebody wants to say that Rick Sanders is a dirty, rotten so-and-so, that's derogatory, but yes. They're allowed to say it.
They're allowed to say that, especially about elected officials. So I have a problem with that. And then 4, employees may not also attribute personal statements, opinions, or beliefs to the county when engaged in blogging, which I do agree with. But then you go down to say if an employee is expressing his or her beliefs and or Story County opinions in blogs, the employee may not expressly or implicitly represent him or herself as an employee or representative of Story County. Well, by virtue of the fact that they're saying they had a tough day at work and they wish that we would fund them better and Rick's on their list right now, that identifies them as an employee. So that one, I think we need to do some at least tweaking on to indicate that they're not expressing this as an official representative of the county.
Correct, yes.
Okay.
I agree.
All right. Those were my 2.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with tweaking that one. I don't have any problem with wholesale change on 3. Marty, any thoughts on either of those?
Site blocking, tell me, but, you know, I think my understanding is the last time we revisited the acceptable use policy has been a number of years, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, technology has moved past this, and social media probably wasn't envisioned or at all where we find it today. So on a site blocking basis, what is your department doing? I mean, are we permitting employees to Facebook on our county network?
The county does have a Facebook page. We don't, and this is under the social media policy, we don't allow Facebook for personal during county time. Now, that doesn't stop people from using their cell phones and the guest cards.
I'm just talking about the county platform. I'm not saying what you do with your iPhone or your Android, that's wholly on your. But I'm just saying, as a hosting entity for that activity, is that something that we just tolerate, or we accept, or we have the ability to negate?
I think we'll talk about that when we review the social media policy, because that's under this umbrella. I know when Paul was here, he wanted it blocked entirely, and we can't do that since we have a Facebook page.
Right, but yes, county equipment should not be used for any personal activity.
Exactly.
That includes personal Facebook. That includes personal blogging. That includes
where I'm going.
County equipment should not be used for any of that, and I think our policies currently reflect that.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Overall, has it been your experience that we've had many instances that would have put this policy into play?
Not currently, not via what we've done on an auditing capacity, I've had managers come to me with questions about things their employees are doing that, you know, is this okay or should I have them do this? So, you know, unofficially, yes, there have been several things. So that's why we need to have a policy so that it gives strength to the managers to enforce things for their employees that right now they have questions about.
Okay. So we're not actively looking to see if anybody's posting anything that would be detrimental to the county. We just, if we were, it's brought to our attention, that's how we find out about it.
We have audits that and notifications that come up if something is going to harm the system, but as far as socially, no.
Okay.
We haven't gone down that path yet.
Yeah, no, we need to not go down that path.
Well, I'm just saying, how do you, when something comes to you because you already have a policy for it, how, you know, did you become aware of it because or how or did you get? I mean, if it's brought to us, then yes, we do have a policy to address that, but are we...
So the closest we've come in my time here is we had an employee in the county attorney's office who started to comment on things that were pending in the county attorney's office, and there were some major issues. Beyond First Amendment, there were some major issues with that. Outside of that, I think there's... our employees rightly have their own personal opinions, and some of them choose to share those personal opinions in many ways, and that's their right, and we need to not be all that worried about it. We do need to make sure that they're not, that they are not allowing the perception that they're speaking on behalf of Story County.
Exactly.
So I've got us removing number 3 on 3.3.3, so that's 3.3.6. Removing that entire point.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's go ahead and rework 4 so that we can get something out today for 7-day review. So, Laura, you take a swipe at it. I agree that we're wanting to make sure that they're not portraying that they represent Story County when they say what they say, that they're speaking for themselves. How do we say that?
Barb, are you comfortable with that as maybe you and I touch base this, early this afternoon and just see how
sure.
We can rewrite that?
Well, then we can't. Okay, then we can't act on it today if we're not going to do it right now.
Oh, okay. You want me to take a swipe while we're
listening to the no, TV? We can go ahead and approve it.
Okay, all right.
We can go ahead and approve it. Go ahead. I'll listen.
These two sections, I think, reflect what our current social media policy kind of states. So, I mean, if you're going to change any of that, we're going to have to take a look at that. When we did draft that, we wrote it so that it did not infringe upon anybody's First Amendment rights. It's a very, very kind of broad statement. It just says that you can't, you know, if you're going to make a post and you say, I work for Story County, you have to make it clear that this is not the opinion of Story County. It's a personal opinion,
right,
which they have that right.
Four.
Yeah, so I mean, as long as we have whatever's, if you look at our social media policy and they both coincide, I mean, if you need to change the social media policy, we can sure take a look at that.
Okay, so we'll discuss passing this with number 4 as written, and then we'll see, along with you, Loris, what changes suggest you come back after during
sure.
our 7-day review.
Okay.
But before we send this out for 7-day review, we'll change any reference to company to county.
Yes.
We'll change any reference to clients and customers to citizens and constituents. And we will remove number 3.
And I believe number 3 is also in our social media
and
policy.
We can bring the social media policy back.
Right, but just because it's in our social media policy doesn't mean
no,
it's
you can
in this
no,
policy. Right.
Yep.
Go ahead and
right.
remove that now before we send it out for 7-day review.
And we will bring the social media policy in for another review.
We can do that.
Okay. And so since I just stated all that, company to county, citizens and constituents instead of clients and customers, and remove number 3 on item 3.3.3, I'll make the motion that we pass. No, we're leaving 4 alone.
No, it's 4.3.3.
4.3.3. Item number 3, taking that one out. I'll make the motion just so that it's clean. What we're talking about.
Okay.
We send this out for 7-day review.
And I second.
Hold some seconds. Further discussion. Marty, are you clear on what we're talking about here?
Could you read the motion?
No, because I'm just putting in changes.
Yeah, so I'm adopting.
Okay, could you just for clarity?
I'm suggesting we send Story County acceptable use policy out for 7-day review.
Yeah.
With the changes. Company is county. Citizens and clients and customers are citizens and constituents,
right.
And we remove section 3 on item 4.3.3.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
None.
None. I'll go back with Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes for 7-day review with those changes, and then we'll see what changes we get back. We expect at least one.
Okay. Thank you, Barb.
Next item is Emergency Management Departmental Report. Keith Morgan.
Morning, Keith.
You had a fire yesterday.
One of many things that have been going on.
Okay, good.
Good morning.
Morning,
ma'am. You've got the report. The first thing that I started off talking about in the report was responses to hazmat activities. We've had two along I-35. Plus, after I submitted the report, there was an ethanol train that derailed up in northwest Iowa, burned for a couple of days. I think all of these taken together do highlight the risk that we have with a major rail line running through the county and I-35 running through the county to Story County from hazmat activities. A hazmat response involves both or includes first responders, insurance companies, Iowa DNR, secondary roads in one of our situations, state patrol. And I think that it, again, highlights to us the value of the hazmat ordinance that we have here in Story County for cost recovery. And I think it's a good example of how being proactive before a disaster happens will better prepare us to be able to respond appropriately if we do have a disaster such as this in our county. The other thing is recent responses have been due to severe weather, which seemed to have started early this year. It was a good shakedown cruise for us. We did identify some things. Our email list needed to be reworked a little bit on that, and also weather radio batteries were kind of going weak on that. So we're going to work to improve on those. What we have coming up is the statewide tornado drill that's going to be happening next Wednesday starting at about 10 o'clock. They're going to walk you through the progression of severe weather as it would naturally occur. And I, again, would like to stress this is a time for Story County, all the departments and each building to practice their severe weather protocols. They can use their weather radios as an alert. Walk through the processes that they would need to do should we have severe weather strike any of our facilities and our buildings so that we can be better prepared as we move into the severe weather season, which we know is coming along. Any questions on our responses?
You know it's related to hazmat that you've requested a grant for the commodity field study for the county to figure out just where our risks might be of hazardous materials or chemicals running through. How much is that grant that you've applied for?
We requested $15,000 just to do a commodity flow study for here within Story County. Under the planning, we have been very, very active on planning, and the main focus has been with our emergency support function 8 and many of the subsections under ESF 8. And it highlights many, many points at which the Board of Supervisors will interact should that plan have to be activated. The first area that we started with has been working with the medical examiner's office to look at how we would respond to a mass fatality, which could occur very rapidly and have many different aspects to it. Some of the areas that we've identified as interaction between the board and the ME's office is if we were to have a response, it's going to be rapid and it's going to be very fluid. And how is that command and control going to work? How are they going to work with you to meet their needs, both in resources and any decisions that might need to be made? We continue to work on that, and we are also working with the funeral homes across the county so that we can optimize our response while minimizing the resources that we need to have stacked up to be able to be ready to do this. We've gotten great response from the funeral homes across the county. Our next step after we look through some of these command and control features will be to get them together and discuss how we can interact with them and how they might assist us should we have a mass fatality.
Right, but now this has brought up a potential hole for us here in Story County. Currently, it takes at least two supervisors to approve any kind of unbudgeted spending. If we activate, so we'll use the example of some kind of mass casualty event, and we activate the EOC. Part of the county's expectation in activating the EOC is that one Board of Supervisor member will be here not 24 hours for one, but we will be serving each one of us in 8-hour shifts covering an entire 24 hours. But it brings up a hole in that if we have mass casualties and we need to go order a bunch of body bags or a bunch of whatever it takes to deal with those, right now it would still take two supervisors to approve that. That's a potential hole in our system where we're going to need to consider, in the event the EOC is activated, are we collectively delegating to whoever is serving for us the ability to bind the county to any kind of purchase? I don't know exactly what that looks like. I mean, that's going to take the county attorney's office really digging in, because statutorily it's pretty clear what we're allowed to do and not allowed to do. But there are instances where Keith needs to order a fuel truck to come in here. So it changes our operation. If we've got to have two of three of us here at any one time in order to do anything, we're going to have to rethink the way we're talking about staffing our office. So we're just going to need to think all that through. So that's just a heads up. It's not for action today.
And it's not just mass fatality. It kind of dovetails also into the Board of Health. And if we were to have a pandemic, those tend to be slower moving. But anything that's rapidly happening, we really need that capability to, within minutes, whether the EOC is open or not, be able to make the connections to people with the authority to make some of those.
Well, who has the authority? Do we have to gather at least two of us? Is it a posted open meeting if we're making a decision? I mean, we've got to work our way through how we're going to respond in the event of a natural disaster, some kind of disaster, where we're responding, minutes matter. And so we need to dig further into that.
And that kind of dovetails, again, to the Board of Health that we've been working with and the Public Health Emergency Response Plan. Again, there's a lot of complex interactions that are going to happen here. We have the Board of Health. You have Public Health, which will act as your incident commander. You've got that individual, as I understand it, is the contract with Mary Greeley. You have IDPH, which also factors into all of this. So, again, just as we've started with the ME, we are starting to make those traces for the command and control network so that we know those answers when we need them, if we should have to make a decision, both activation of ordinances, financial obligations, items like that. So we're going to continue to work on that, and I've got a feeling we're scheduling meetings with the Board of Health to better educate them on the incident command structure, how it would work, their roles, their responsibilities as it's defined in code, and how they are going to act to execute those. And even public meeting laws have become a part of that. Finally, this is one that is kind of external to the Board of Supervisors, but we are also working on our mass casualty incident response plan. That's primarily, I'm working with our first responders across the county, our hospitals. There'll be some work with the Story County Sheriff's Dispatch Office on that. But again, to optimize our capability to rapidly, that one is very critical, that it's a matter of minutes that we can get that command and control structure established and start making some pretty significant decisions as we're doing that. So any other questions about our planning activities? Operationally, we've been working with planning and development, looking at one of the items that was in the C2C plan, which is EP1, which was to look at how we can mitigate risk through planning and development. And what we've looked at are some of the safeguards that possibly should be developed for that interface between the residential aspects and also the agricultural and industrial activities that might have hazardous activities. This is highlighted again by West Texas, where they allowed residential activities to grow up next to a
an agricultural industrial activity that was hazardous, resulting in multiple deaths and quite a bit of damage to the city.
Actually had a school right next to it.
There was a school, there was a nursing facility, there was actually two schools, a nursing facility, all grew up around a storage facility of ammonium nitrate.
Sure.
So what we've started looking at how things are done, and quite honestly, we're not finding many templates that we can steal from within Iowa, so Gary and I are starting to look at what should this look like? What's there now? What should we be doing? How do we balance the risk? How do we provide information? Who should accept that risk? So I don't anticipate coming back to you very rapidly on this one, but we're going to continue to look at this so that we can optimize it, prevent this damage on the front end as opposed to responding to it on the back end of it. The recent meetings regarding the Master Matrix Plan has prompted us to review our sections on that with an eye to the discussions that were presented on that. We have developed some information papers. We are waiting for just a little bit more input that we need from some other agencies, but we will finish up those papers, laying out possibly some options, working through environmental health, and try and get them up to you for your consideration. And as you've heard me talking about, we've got the EOC exercise that will be coming up on April 26th. It is primarily focused internally as to how we're going to activate that EOC, how we're going to do shift change and things like that. We have expanded it slightly. We're going to have the Red Cross there. It's likely that the Iowa Air National Guard will be sending up people to observe it so that they can get a better understanding of what happens to the local area should their resources need to come out to the local area. We welcome visits by the Board of Supervisors to come on down there. And as we have resources, we'll try and show you what's happening and where it will impact on you. And as you've heard, we've still got a lot of plans that we need to work through. We will continue to work on the mass fatality plan, mass casualty incident plan, the public health plan, emergency support function 10, which is hazmat, emergency support function 13, which is public safety, and integrating all of the medical stuff into ESF-8, which is our medical plan. And we currently have the search and rescue plan out for comment at this time. So with that, I open it up to questions and comments.
I'll just stay here with Dr. Weidert and Keith on the mass casualty, mass fatalities. And it is, I mean, this had not been revisited from what year it escapes you right now. I mean, you are bringing something on a refreshment basis that has not
every
been.
5 years.
Yeah.
And we, I just started when we went through this one the first time and just didn't have the capacity to dig into it to this level that we're doing this second revision on.
No, you probed to the depth. I mean, you really are left with a good, you know, pick a number with the mass fatality situation. Then if you get that far and you start on a provisioning basis and what you do on expensing and how it all implements from the moment of notification to an IC on scene, moving it through is quite a lot of moving parts. And I tell you what, I do not envy Keith for what he's got to do to bring this, just to put it to paper, to give us for something that we would approve.
It's there's so many plans that Keith and we work on that we hope we never, ever, ever have to use. But there will never be a time that we'll say, oh, I just wish we had spent a little less time planning for this. And the flip side of that is we're never going to be completely prepared. I mean, nothing that we do is going to have us completely prepared, but we can be 8 steps ahead of where we would have been had we not planned. We're fortunate to have Keith and Melissa. Story County is absolutely a model in emergency management, not only in the state of Iowa, but in the entire Midwest, and I think starting to get recognized nationally for some of the things that we're putting in place. And Keith, we sure appreciate the work you put in, and we hope we never, ever have to use some of this stuff.
I'm with you.
I agree with that, and I want to thank Keith and Melissa for the time they spent with me about 3 weeks ago going over as the alternate and, for RIC, for emergency management, and I appreciated that. And then when the first tornado watch came and Rick was in D.C. and Marty had some type of version of not feeling well, very not well, and I realized I was the person. And that was, and I wish I'd spent 5 days with you all of a sudden. Unfortunately, nothing happened. So, and thank you very much. I do have a question. I noticed in your report it talks about working, continuing to work with DuPont. Mm-hmm. On the Stover fires. And if you recall, about a month ago, I asked for some contacts at DuPont. A constituent who lives up by there had noted that there was still smoking coming out of there. So I was just wondering about any progress related to what will happen the next time we've got that kind of fire situation.
DuPont currently is working on multiple paths towards this. They have been investigating prevention through lightning strike. They're working with a nationally recognized expert on lightning. I sat down, DuPont and two DuPont reps and myself are investigating whether there is a good plume detection or a plume model for development that would easily be placed over any Stover fire that's based upon science and also nationally recognized standards, so that we, instead of just guessing at who we need to inform, we'll be better able to inform. We just got back a report back from the company that has been forwarded to DuPont for them to look that over and see if it will meet their needs on that. I have requested, and they will be presenting at the Emergency Management Commission meeting that's coming up. And they're going to discuss the progress on other activities.
We pulled the entire group together. The Emergency Management Commission pulled the entire group together. I want to say we had 5 or 6 people from DuPont. As part of that, we had a bunch of first responders and have really dug in. I think Ray Rhodes here in Nevada is kind of leading the conversation on behalf of the first responders. Keith is leading it on behalf of Emergency Management, but really trying to dig into it. There aren't any just clean answers to any of this. What's causing it? What kind of impact the age of the Stover bales have? I mean, whether tarps are affecting it by holding methane in. I mean, for every time I think we come up with an answer, we hear something contradictory to it.
Exactly. And part of one of the plans is to take some of these bales out to, I think it's Underwriter Laboratories, and they're going to burn it. Because we need to understand, at what radiant heat does this light off, so that we can, instead of just kind of guessing, that will drive separation distances between the stacks. And there will be some risk management decisions on how much should we set it up so that we know that that is likely to burn. Because once this stuff starts, there are other things that we're looking at. But I'm working with DuPont to almost put a project management flow chart together on this. What information do we need first to get the get us furthest down the path to being able to mitigate the risk and the impacts of these as best as we can, as quickly as we can. But we don't want to jump too far ahead, go down the wrong path, and then find out that we've got to back up and start from someplace else.
Thanks.
I guess before we get too far past, this is one of those that I just find when you do deal with this, and the Stover pile out there on the Feeble Farm is in the neighborhood, and I woke up to all my smoke alarms going off one night when it was burning. So I take it personal. That said, what I find on a disconnect basis is the fact that a flare camera is something that Keith's department doesn't have, and we're left on the good graces of sending the Nevada Fire Department out there to look, see if we've got hot spots. I'm not saying we need to expend $20,000, but that's a piece of equipment on a determination basis that has a technological immediacy about it, that if we think there's a problem, I mean, if you see a plume, okay, fine. But the thing is, easy to left to physically going out there and feeling for it, or bringing out somebody with the technology to determine it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the suspicion is there, but the confirmation isn't. And I'm just throwing it out there to mull over, for the fact that it's just like, if we have these, we brought industry to our midst, that may present this on an ongoing basis. There is a tool that he does not have that it would allow him to possibly render up an action that might have to would be lessened in its haste, because he doesn't have the ability to say, yeah, there's a hot spot, we got a fire there that we can't see right now, but we think that there might be a problem in progress. we have to bring the data at their own NVEDA or AIMS or whatever responsive agency has that technology. Keith, you could probably speak to this a lot better than I.
Honestly, in a situation like that, I would prefer to bring NVEDA out because it's their jurisdiction.
Okay.
And let them make the choice. I'm not a qualified firefighter or EMS. They're willing. Never had a complaint from a first responding agency to come out and do that stuff. There are the things that, and we've had these discussions in emergency management. The connections between the jurisdictions and between the disciplines is the stuff that I would like to my agency to concentrate on. And there are things that could enhance our capability to do that. And as a part of our strategic plan, we're really narrowing down on what should my office have and what should we expect other offices to have, and how can we make those linkages.
That's who funds it.
Yeah, that's
because
that's
when you bring it, when you have an entity that's doing something that has never been done before, mm-hmm. is not being done to this magnitude anywhere else, at this point, I'm referring to keeping the Stover bales, and you find that there is some kind of response equipment, and this is to your point, some kind of response equipment that is necessary to the safe operation of those things, then it just makes sense to me that the entity, the lone entity that is facilitating that would be responsible for providing. And to DuPont's credit, now they've been wide open and I think completely recognized that these are their Stover belts, whether they're formally theirs or not. There's only one reason that we're keeping Stover right now. Mm-hmm. And so they've been really, really good to work with, but I don't think this falls to the public to necessarily provide something that strictly benefits one entity. Yeah. Any other questions?
None.
All right. Thanks, Keith. Good job. Keep it up.
Oh, and I plan on spending all day April 26th down there watching, just watching. I'll try to stay out of your way, okay? Every little bit I can learn.
Next is Central Iowa Tourism and Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. All right, we got to talk about the things we never want to have happen. Now we get to talk about the things that we want to have always happen.
We're still old school, so you still get hard copies right. of a few things.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oh, amazing. All right. I noticed someone was featured quite prominently several times.
Awesome. And I was looking through the
materials. She's a star.
What we want to do is just review 2016 and then give you a quick look at 2017. If you look through the Convention and Visitors Bureau annual report, you'll find that we are now in our sixth year of consistent growth of visitor spending in Ames and Story County, because it does encompass all of that. Last year continues, Iowa State University is obviously continues to be the major draw for many of our groups. We still do a large number of youth groups, but the sports market is really the area where we have been able to grow the most, and that is basically due to the new facilities that we have. Some of those are Iowa State University, the new complex, sports complex with the track and the fields. But also over here in Nevada this last year, we were able to host two major events, the Quidditch, which if you did not see that, was entertaining, and also a national ASA softball tournament over at the Score Complex. So, our ability to attract groups is really totally dependent on the facilities that we have for those events to come. We also have the addition of two new hotels in the Ames market. So now we have 1,574 hotel rooms. So that also helps with our marketing budget. And with that, in 2017, we are really looking to expand our marketing and development offices. We have created several new positions and have also added a digital communications person, which is something we have never had. We've divided our marketing efforts and are adding two coordinators for events and a salesperson. So glad to see that growth. Also in 2016, if you missed it, we did a rollout of our site cycle program. It was an idea that we borrowed from a trip that we went to Manhattan, Kansas with the Chamber, and they had a free bicycle program. So while we could not do it for the whole community, we did purchase bicycles, and four hotels participated with us last year and made them available for visitors in their hotels to use the bike trails in and around Ames and Story County. And this year we have six hotels that will be participating in that. So it's a fun program, and we did get some major coverage of that throughout the country because of the free cycles. Part of this, the Convention and Visitors Bureau and our agreement with the city, is we do set aside funds for our community grant program. That continues to grow every year. Last year, for this year in 2017, we were able to allocate about $84,000 to various programs and projects. Two of the new ones were geocachers, and another one was the Story County Volunteer Center received some funds for their events. So it's fun for the hospitality industry to really give back to both the City of Ames and the county, because we need everybody here to be great ambassadors when we do bring these events to the community. So excited about that. And applications for events in 2018 are now currently being accepted. So they will not be reviewed until this fall. But if you have an event that you're working on now or one that you're planning for 2018, you can go ahead and make that application while you have that information. In addition, our communications, we have two new websites. One is thinkames.com, and it replaces the visitames.com, since Ames is a smart choice. And then we do have one that is sitesofames.com, which tells you about all the things to do in and around Ames and Story County if you are a visitor while you're here. So if you get a chance, check out those two websites. The second part of our report is usually on the Central Iowa Tourism Region. And because of changes in our office, the last bit, you probably see more of Allison than you do of me. She is actually on the board of Central Iowa Tourism Region at the moment. She's the current treasurer and in line to keep moving in those offices. So she is attending those meetings. And as a representative from Story County, it's probably more appropriate that she be the Story County representative rather than myself moving forward, because she is at all of those meetings and can bring that information back. So with that, I'm going to turn the Central Iowa Tourism Report over to Allison.
All right. Well, I will just say that good enough? Okay. That the only reason my picture's in here was because they contacted us for some photos. So, but we did. It was a very good year for Central Iowa Tourism, as you can see in the annual report. Did some great professional development and education programs for the region. We also, I just wanted to share that Story County had a couple of Iowa Tourism grant recipients this year. Prairie Rivers of Iowa is putting together a Lincoln Highway Heritage Byway camping and recreational brochure. And that received some funding from Iowa Tourism. And Ryman Gardens received funding for their new exhibit that will open in late April, I guess it is, Washed Ashore. And then also an initiative that they are leading with some Central Iowa public gardens and arboretums in Ames, the Iowa Ryman Gardens, Iowa Arboretum, the Des Moines Arboretum, and the Brenton Arboretum. So they're putting together some marketing to draw people, and they receive some tourism funding for that. And then also we've got some opportunities for professional development that are going to be right close by, and so we wanted to share that with you, and I've included an actual copy of the registration form. The registration deadline is today, I'll just point that out, and that is the CITR Iowa Tourism Town Meeting. And the Iowa Tourism Office will be there to kind of tell people how they can work more closely with the tourism office to take advantage of the services that they provide. And it will be held at Ryman Gardens on Wednesday, the 29th. And it is being sponsored by our office as well as Ryman Gardens, CIT Signature Transportation, and the Legacy Hotel Group, which is the Country Inn and Suites and the American Inn Suites. And all of the organizations work together to put that proposal together to have them meet in Ames. And we'd be happy to have representation. We also have the Power of Travel Day, which is Friday, April 21st. That will be at Prairie Meadows, but they're bringing two good speakers in for that, talking a little bit about sales and as well as capturing mind share of the consumer as far as marketing to tourists and tourism. And then also on April 18th, we will be hosting a customer service and hospitality training. And it is through funding that the Central Iowa Tourism Region received from the Iowa Tourism Office and the Economic Development Authority. They were able to receive funding for 14 communities to host this tourism hospitality training and customer service training. And they're bringing in Iowa State Extension speakers to do the training. So we are able to offer this to anyone in the county that's interested. All of our members are able to bring their staff and do some customer service training on April 18th at Ryman Gardens. And then you have the newest version of the Iowa Central Iowa Tourism Region's travel guide. And I did note in there the two-page spread of Ames area organizations that we all went together to support the magazine with advertising. So with that,
thank you so much. Julie, I'd start with any movement in the last year on convention space.
As you might know, the Iowa State Center is under new management, and they continue to work with the university and the city on the potential of a hotel and additional space at the Iowa State Center. But unfortunately, from funding reasons at the moment, we're not much closer, but there are several plans that we're continuing to look at.
What groups did we lose in this last year because we don't have space?
There are three that we were unable to bid on. One is coming back to us, and that's ABI. And we're trying to be very creative while we could not truly host the event that they want to by using the Sukup end zone, by using the equestrian center at Iowa State, the Hanson Ag Center. You know, we're getting very creative on some space.
Congratulations on your creativity. It's unfortunate that you have to be that creative.
But, again, if we have the spaces, we can usually find a market that really wants to be in Central Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
Julie, now I found myself always driving on Southeast 16th, and it seems like you have a hotel always in progress, or you just fill that in that corridor very nicely. And I know there's a lot of community angst about whether to do that and to address that on a paving basis and infill. But what is your usage and capacity in Ames as far as, with all this new brought online in, you know, recent years, what is your usage over there?
The hotel?
Yes.
Occupancy in Ames has grown, and in the 2016, our average occupancy was in the mid to high 60s. Of which
it's always seemed full. You can't just go past there, and it just seems like, I don't care, pick the day. If you go there in the evening, you just see the cars parked down, you think, I don't even know what's going on, but they're here for something.
They are, and you know, we have two very distinct different groups of types of hotels. Obviously those on the interstate definitely benefit us with large groups, but they also attract a lot of the traffic off of I-35.
Right.
Where our convention hotels and more of the university hotels are closer into campus. So we actually have a nice balance at the moment. And there is potentially another three hotels that are looking to come into the area. So we may see continued growth in the next.
And a couple of those are high-end full-service hotels, right?
One of them, one I of believe, them. Is a high-end full-service hotel. Then we have a limited service, and then we have a non-full-service. So you can pick your choice.
To that end, with the hotel-motel tax revenue that's generated off all these rooms, you've got an idea to economic development component, but what is, when you, the dollars that are raised for the quality of life funding for the residents of Story County or Ames or both, what does that speak to?
The way hotel-motel tax is collected, it's 7%, which is the state limit. 5% of that returns to the Ames Convention Visitors Bureau for our marketing and our initiatives to attract other groups. 2% stays with the city of Ames. 1% is economic development, goes into that budget and the Ames budget for that. The other one actually replaces the local option tax for quality of life in Ames, because you don't charge local option tax along with hotel motel tax. So it's actually a replacement of that tax. So that's the 2% that stays with the city.
So we welcome all visitors because it
we do welcome all visitors.
Enriches our coffers.
They do help. There's very few budgets that we can say, again, for 6 years we've been adding to those budget items. So we're very proud of that, and that the hospitality industry can be a driving force for economic development.
Absolutely. Laura's questions?
Yes. The first one has to do with the Central Iowa report, and it notes down their membership, and it shows that Story County is a member.
Yes.
And I don't remember us discussing that we pay a fee for that. Do we pay a fee for it?
Yes, and you've paid it for as long as I've been around, always on time. They never have to ask about it.
Oh, smartly.
So I beyond that, I can't.
You don't know what it is?
$250?
Okay. All right. It must be in some general category.
I think it's in law. Mark was here. I think it's in loss, and I think it's just one of those carry forwards. Yep.
Okay. So it allows you to be a member and have two representatives in CITR, and then it allows all county organizations to apply for those grants that Allison was referring to, and be available to all their advertising and promotion.
Okay. So, and that's CITR as opposed to your own grant
program.
Correct. Okay. Yep. Well, I have somewhat of a history here, having partnered when I owned the bulletin board and have been to some of these meetings for Central Iowa Tourism. It's fascinating. I'll try to get out someone at Random Gardens for the tourism day, at least to say hi. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Outstanding. So next we have Volunteer Center annual report.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for your time this morning. Yes, I'm Ann Owens from the Volunteer Center. This is Lauren Henry, the new generation coordinator, who just started with us in January, so she's in the process of completing her third month. Very excited about that right now. Let me find my notes before I start just rambling numbers here. It has been very busy. My apologies on not submitting our year-to-date report. I was out sick last week when I should have been doing it and decided recuperating was probably healthier across the board. So, exactly. Coming to this month, I think we'll all be happier. So we are headed into April, which is a nationally recognized and very busy time for us. Tonight we have a group of 70 folks coming, some coming from Des Moines, working with Iowa State students that will be doing a service project, making care packages to be delivered to our local veterans through Veterans Administration and American Legion. That is one of the highlights over the last year that we have seen at the Volunteer Center of Story County, is an increase in interest in groups coming in, employers coming together, bringing their employees together to do service and benefit the community and be engaged as groups of employers and entities, which is a very exciting trend that's happening throughout Iowa, but here in Story County, too. So that kicks us off, followed by Stash the Trash on April 1st. Our target goal is 500 volunteers. We're sitting at about 150, so if no one is doing anything on Saturday, April 1st, stop by Ryman Gardens in the morning. We have donuts and breakfast. give you all the supplies you need, pick an area, head out, clean up some trash. It's an immediate impact service project. As soon as you're done, you can see you've done something good, appropriate for all ages. People have asked, I don't think we'll be implementing the neatest things accumulated this year, but we'll keep working on that. But the Story County Park producers are coming back again this year and will be grilling lunch for us, so it's a great event with great food and immediate impact, and we're very excited about that on April 1st. April 4th is Mayor's and County Day of Service. No pressure on any of you. But it is a day sponsored by the Corporation for National Community Service, recognizing the service of our elected officials as well as the opportunity for elected officials to represent the significant service makes to our community. April 8th, then we are assisting with the Stash the Trash, Step into Storybooks. Stash the Trash is obviously on my mind. Step into Storybooks at the Ames Public Library, helping them this year for the first time coordinate their volunteer efforts and use our system. Followed by on April 21st, we will be, for the second year, mobilizing the entire Nevada High School student body and are expecting about 450 students to come out, working on about 20 to 30 different projects through the day. As well as then on April 27th, I'm very proud to announce that we received 24 nominations for the Story County Youth Volunteer Awards this year. We will be recognizing those individuals. Again, it's very humbling to know what four-year-olds are out there doing to serve our community, but also very exciting to see. And Eric Hansen will be coming up as a native of Story County and speaking at the event as well. So we're very excited about that. All in all, with April, we are launching our 35th anniversary celebration. The Volunteer Center of Story County has been serving Story County for 35 years. I'm very proud and very excited to be looking forward to the next year of how we're going to continue that for another 35 years. All the warm, fuzzy stuff and schedule aside, to let you know, 2016-2017 has been a very successful year. We have seen 21 straight growths of registered users using our online referral system. We are now at 7,956 registered users in our system. About 2,200 of them, or just a third or so, are actively using it. The other two-thirds, we have their email addresses. They know we're there. Someday they'll use it. But so we have made 3,600 or so referrals between our events. We have mobilized volunteers for the Volunteer Center, our activities alone. We have mobilized 1,900 volunteers to date since July 1. And they have served 4,300 hours. For an economic valuation calculation of that, the return on volunteer investment just from Story County alone, those volunteers with that many hours, your investment of $8,500 in the Volunteer Center of Story County generates about a $10.21 return for each hour and dollar invested in the community. So that's huge to us and huge to the community, I think, when you look it over. Two other things to note, the Volunteer Center has received some national recognition in the last year. We were recognized by the Make a Difference Day Foundation, Newman's Own, Gannett Publishing Group, for our winter weatherization, and we received a $10,000 donation from the Newman's Own Foundation for those efforts that we are working with Central Iowa RSVP on how we can continue that program as well as expand other service opportunities. And then we received certification as a service enterprise, which is an elite certification through the Points of Light Foundation for our volunteer engagements in our organization. We are one of under 300. It's 294 agencies in 13 states that have achieved this certification in how we are effectively engaging volunteers at all our own, at throughout all levels of our organization for maximum impact. We received that certification. We were then designated as a training hub for the region. Last year, we took four agencies through the training, YSS, Story County Conservation, Campus Town Action Association, and Overflow Thrift Store. Story County Conservation is the first out of that cohort to receive the certification. They are the third in the county that have received certification of service enterprise, ourselves, Central Iowa RSVP, now Story County, YSS, and Overflow Thrift Store are on schedule yet this spring to achieve certification. And we are recruiting our second cohort right now. So that's the highlights of my bullet points on my notes.
Outstanding. Well, it doesn't sound like you have much going on.
Hardly at all. I'll just be sitting there doing
I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. Me too. So.
Well, so I appreciate everything you guys do, but I noting the return on investment that any time a public entity puts in resources to encouraging volunteerism, that's what makes a community special. And thank you so much for the work that you guys put in to make that a reality. And 10-1 is pretty good. Questions or comments?
I'm impressed with the fact that we put dollars that are leveraged at multiples of 10 plus. You didn't need to write it down. It's all in your head. You, we sit up here every week and hear presentations, and that was impressive what you just did.
I studied my computer screen before I came.
I did. Oh, well, it shows. You were tuned up, and it went well.
Thank you.
Laura, do you have any notes?
I'm always impressed with how much work you get done, the Volunteer Center gets done, with just, what, three staff members?
Two paid staff, and we are currently at three volunteer positions. If as a result of our service enterprise efforts and looking at that, we have 25 identified volunteer positions just to operate our organization. That generates down to, if we had greater funds, it would be probably 8 or 9 full and part-time staff to run the operations. So we're trying.
Good job.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You
too. All right. No departmental reports or other reports. Public forum number 2 is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Board may not take any action to those comments due to the requirements of a meeting call, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on any topic? Seeing no one moving immediately to the microphone, liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Loris, I'll start with you this week.
Okay. Unfortunately, it's going to be a couple minutes. I do want to talk a little bit about children and families. On March 6th, March 9th, we had the meeting for Boost, which deals with early childhood education. And they are struggling with the budget reductions that have happened for fiscal year 17 because their funding comes from the state, the majority of it. And they're panicking also about fiscal year 18. And this agency now is being funded at 85% of what it was a decade ago. And for when you adjust for inflation, it's 75%. So on a positive note, then the next Friday, I did go over with the director to the Nevada Head Start and watched the I believe 20 kids in there. And it's very clear they're getting a quality experience, education through play. And I was very impressed. There are changes in federal guidelines. Just to let you know, that means that they're having to increase their hours without any or head. Their Head Start in general is having to increase the number of hours of service without any increase in funding federally. How it will impact us in our funding of that program through the early childhood education is that we are already getting money to these kids to go all day long. What may happen is either their early drop-off hours, like at 7:30 for the parents, or pick-up hours after 5 o'clock. Those hours may have to be cut, which directly affects the low-income parents to start with. So that is a concern. And then another concern related with is that there is legislation down at the State House right now. It has to do with no longer refundability of tax credits, if you're aware of that, but that's something that's been called for. It's supposed to be directed so that corporations, if they end up with a $10 million tax credit, they can't get a check back. But what's happened is right now the earned income credit is included in that. And if it's not broken out, that's going to impact, once again, our low-income working families, and they're going to probably be relying more on assets. So I just want wanted to bring that up. Now back to the main report here, okay. On March 6th, I did attend a meeting as an observer with the Project Iowa director, Jean Cressy and Deb Childroth. I felt the meeting was very productive in the fact that Project Iowa was notified that they need to provide a much better argument to come before to ask for any funding, whether it be from United Way or the Story County Board. It was specifically brought up that there are probably 30 to 40 open full-time jobs that HOC can't fill. Dan Foss has open jobs that can't be filled, and therefore there seems to be a disconnect between we've already got people in the community who could go out and who are working low-paid jobs who could go out and apply for some of those, and they just aren't getting the applications, period. So just a little update on that then. Moving along here, yesterday I met with the co-chairs of the Story County Housing Trust Fund task force just to talk about the ask that is coming to us. We received that request yesterday, and I believe they're coming on April 4th to make a presentation to talk about that. Tonight, Deb Childroth and I are going to my first Central Iowa Regional Housing Authority meeting. We have an interesting situation there that we may want to take a look at later on. We had no one representing us on that board, and when the city of Ames decided to give up the administration of basically Section 8 housing, the kind of the deal worked out with the county and with the city of Ames was that their housing person would represent us on this executive board. And so even though it should be a Story County representative, I'm the alternative. And I'm replacing Deb, and so they're going every other month. Down the road, we may want to take a look at that and determine about who's best able to represent if there's an ability to bring public housing out to other areas. I have already learned that we always think of Section 8 as being an Ames program, but we do have recipients throughout the county in almost every one of our other communities who have a Section 8 agreement with their landlords. So it's something that we should stay advised with or stay interested in. And of course, that Thursday I had the HERDA board meeting in the morning, and I'm going to try and drop in on the Central Iowa Governing Board meeting before the Wellness Committee at 2 o'clock, and then the night I'm headed up to Community and Family Resources. One of the things that I expect to hear with the Community and Family Resources is an update on how it's going with the MCOs, and Marty, I'm sure with you being on the Central Iowa Community Services, you are getting very regular updates about that. I'm just going to go ahead and continue my schedule to let you know. Friday, I've been invited to attend a roundtable discussion on the House Bill 597, and that is the one introduced that would take a 0.1% increase on the sales tax to go ahead and put into the Iowa Legacy Fund. And I've already asked Leanne if she would like to accompany me to that. I'll reach out to Mike Cox to see, you know, I don't know why they picked me, maybe because I was in the office. Okay, when the call came, and I had already agreed to endorse it. I will be dropping by Reggie's Sleep Out at Jack Trice Stadium on Saturday, March 25th. I just ahead here, I have been asked to speak at the ICCI's Master Matrix Workshop on March 30th. I cannot attend our invitation from Bill Kauser on April 10th to go back and take a more in-depth tour of his farm, but I have already arranged to go see another cattle producer who has a confinement operation, Brian Sampson. So I'll get there and take care of that. And let's see what else is there on this. Oh, yes. I have a request. And Marty, this may be something that you have been dealing with, but weren't you part of the Dakota Pipeline Monitoring Group for the county, or involved in those discussions when various department heads were getting together to discuss the Dakota Pipeline as it was being put in?
I don't think Marty was part of that.
Right? Okay, maybe. No, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Okay, all right.
That was a staff.
Yeah. All right.
What I'd like to do is now, it apparently that they're going to start flowing, or have flowed. I haven't tracked it since yesterday. I would like this to ask our staff to follow up with the county landowners who were affected by the pipeline, just to find out once that the fluid is flowing, if they're having any problems.
And how would you suggest that we do that?
Possibly a letter or a quick phone call. Maybe the ones who are monitoring could split up those landowners among themselves.
Is this deliberation? Well, it will be if we consider doing anything.
Right.
That's what we're getting to.
That's
how
what we're getting
would we consider
to.
Doing
so, yeah, so.
I just wondered where we're going here.
We would be bringing it up for the, I'm bringing it up now so it'd be placed on the agenda for
right.
March 28th.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Yeah. 28th, not the 21st, or it is
21st. Today is the 21st,
okay.
So that takes care of it.
Okay, good, done. Okay. Marty.
Having several meetings here, just recently in the Second Judicial, and with the Sacramento Council of Aging, one of the overarching concerns is where they are in a budgeting position with the unsettled financial circumstances at the state of Iowa and the legislature proper. That have a flavoring of their respective missions going forward, because you've had some dramatic walkbacks and we find ourselves in a position where you're going to be borrowing from any day funds to get to, you know, fiscal 18. And I think that I hope that that cloud passes over us. But other than that, starting an engineering study to get our county sheds into production here this week, beginning with Mike Espeset over at Star County Construction first tomorrow.
Outstanding. Nothing for me. Any announcements for us?
Oh, I took care of them.
Shelly, can we combine liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcement supervisor just into one bullet rather than having it two separate bullets on our agenda? And Laura, if you'll work with Shelly on getting something on our agenda for next week on what you updated us on that you want to consider. And if there's nothing else, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. And Leanne, I forgot to do your...